Tonight I'm going to begin in John chapter 7.
John chapter 7.
And we're going to look at verse 12. John 7 and in verse 12. And there we read, "There was much grumbling among the crowds concerning him. Some were saying, 'He is a good man.' Others were saying, 'No, on the contrary, he leads people astray.'" In John chapter 10 and in verse 19, John records these words, "And a division occurred again among the Jews because of these words. And many of them were saying, 'He is a demon and is insane. Why do you listen to him?' And others were saying, 'These are not the sayings of one demon possessed. A demon cannot open the eyes of the blind, can he?'" So in these statements, you have recorded for us a division. People seeing Jesus differently. Some believing, or at least having the beginning steps of faith, leaving that door open that he is who he says he is. And others not believing in Jesus. But also in the statements, the reason why they were not believing in Jesus. And so it is tonight that we're going to talk about that very subject. But in today's world, why people don't believe in Jesus. And so I started thinking about this. And I started doing some investigative research because, truthfully, I've studied the so-called experts, the critics, the college teachers, and the authors, the liberal authors out there, and I know why they don't believe in Jesus. But I was curious as to why what we might say the more common folk. What's the reason they give for not believing in Jesus? And so I decided to start looking on YouTube and start seeing if there was anyone out there that would, put out a video as to not only that they don't believe in Jesus, but why they don't believe in Jesus. And I want to share some of what I found, because I think it strengthens the impact of it when you hear it directly from a person's mouth, rather than me just relating it to you. And so we're going to get a start here, and we'll probably come back to this lesson and finish it off at a later point. But before we start talking about why people don't believe in Jesus today, there was an interesting video I saw of a gentleman that did what he called a social experiment. And he made up two signs. One of the signs said, "I am a believer in God. Please try to convince me I'm wrong." Something along those lines. And he took that sign out and he stood out on a street corner. In fact, he says he tried several different locations to see if anyone, an atheist or so, would stop and try to convince him not to believe in God. And he says he stood out there, and the video shows him at different locations, and no one talks to him. Well, after he felt like there was a considerable amount of time trying that, he then took out the second sign that says, "I do not believe in God. I'm an atheist. Try to prove me wrong." And as you might suspect, there were different reactions. As people drove by, some would roll down their window and yell out something. I think one of them yelled out, "Get a job!" I don't know what that proved, but other people, as they stopped at the red light, would say various things to him. In fact, one car actually pulled off the road, parked, and two sisters got out, not in the Catholic sense, but two actual sisters. And they went and they talked to this man. And he says in this video, it wasn't really a religious experiment, but that he was trying to see which side had more passion. And so his conclusion was that those who don't believe in God aren't very passionate in trying to convince others. And I think there's some truth to that, but there are definitely atheists who want other people to be atheists. There's definitely an evangelism to it. But I was well pleased that those who are believers in God saw this sign and that it was some type of effort that was made. These two ladies I talked about, their approach was simply to say, well, we care about you. We love you and we're concerned about you. And I think that was, you know, an appropriate place to start. And I thought that was good. But in watching that video, it kind of did alarm me in some of these videos that people who do believe in God and believe in Jesus didn't seem to really have any concrete answers. Other than maybe some saying, well, you've got to believe in God. Look at the air you breathe. Or someone saying, you know, well, I love you. But there was no persuasion, which he was asking for, no cases that were made. And that kind of alarmed me because we know very well that a mass majority of unbelievers believe in themselves that Christians only believe because, well, we want to believe. And unfortunately, some believers support that stereotype, that false conclusion, by not knowing how to talk to others about the proof of God and in Jesus. And so my goal here is one, to give kind of an impact of what people believe or why they don't believe in Jesus. Number two, maybe to give some insight how they look at us who do believe in Jesus. And number three, most importantly, hoping that I can give you some reminders, some insight, some things that you can have in your holster, if you will. That if someone was to ask you why you believe in Jesus, or someone asked you, convince me that there is a God, that you could pull these out and that you would know them. So, why is it that people don't believe in Jesus? One of the things that I found quite a bit was that many people believe that Christians are brainwashed. Or some went as far as to say that they see Christians as mentally ill. And there was a large range of views, some going as far as mental illness, some saying they're brainwashed, some say Christians are stupid, stuff like that. And so I want to share with you a video. You probably have seen this come about. Recent comments by a TV personality by the name of Joy Behar, who's on an opinion show, and she is one of the liberal opinions on the show. And in this show, they were recently talking about Vice President Mike Pence and some recent comments he made about his Christian faith and how Jesus talks to him and how he listens to the comments of Jesus. And so I want to play this clip for you
and let you hear the actual words themselves. Just know that's the context. They're talking about the Vice President.
I don't know if I want that.
It's one thing to talk to Jesus. It's another thing when Jesus talks to you.
Exactly.
Okay, well,
that's different. That's different.
That's called mental illness, if I'm not correct.
But
no,
I'm
hearing voices.
This is just more proof of why shows.
So there was that was a clip there of what she actually said, and she got in all sorts of trouble. Mike Pence, I thought, came out and gave a very, very appropriate response to it. And I will say that Joy Behar, since that time, actually did call up the Vice President and apologized for her comments. She also went on the air and apologized. And Mike Pence then returned and said,
yeah, I absolutely do forgive her. And there was some question as to, you know, whether she was really sincere or if this was simply because the network was getting her in trouble for her comments. And I thought Mike Pence, you know, replied appropriately, that's not for me to decide. She asked, or she asked for forgiveness of that, and I'm going to forgive her. And I think that's exactly right. But along those lines, I found this video that I think a lot of people have been taught, a lot of people believe kind of this same idea. This is a video, this is the longest one I'll show you, of a psychotherapist, that's what he calls himself. He says he is a psychotherapist, Dr. Ray Higgins. And in this video, he is a very persuasive speaker. He is preaching to a group of believers, people who believe in Jesus. And I'm not going to show you this part, but towards the beginning of his discussion with these people, he lets them know that he is going to talk to them about why he doesn't believe in Jesus. And at the beginning, you can hear the gasp and the shock, and people are kind of like, oh. And it's amazing to me, as he continues on in this conversation, how easily this group of believers is persuaded. How easily they start buying into what he's saying. So, let's go to that video. Let's see if I can get out of this. And I will tell you at the beginning here, what he is commenting on is someone that has asked him in the past to prove that Jesus doesn't exist. And his opening comment is here, how am I going to prove someone doesn't exist if they never exist?
And that's kind of where we are in this speech.
How can I prove that it doesn't exist? So I told her, I said, let me reverse the challenge. Prove to me that they did exist. And I will pay all of your living expenses for the rest of your life.
Now that's going to be hard to prove to him that Jesus exists. Now why is that? Because the main historical document that talks about Jesus, he will not accept. He won't accept you talking about Jesus from the Bible.
You see? That's what we should be. And I asked her, I said, you're asking me to prove to you that there was no Adam, there was no Eve, there was no Noah. You're asking me to prove this to you. Did you ask your original teachers who taught you this to prove to you then that they existed?
No.
The answer is no. I didn't do it. I was raised with a belief system. I was raised in a belief system. And I accepted it, I digested it, without ever verifying the existence.
Okay, that's a good point. But here's the problem. So if now I do seek out the evidence of my faith, the inclination that he's making, the assumption he's making, is that you will find that there's no evidence. And to that, I highly disagree. And that's the problem. He's setting up a presupposition, an argument that doesn't necessarily have
a truth basis to it.
Of anybody I have been taught about, can I get a witness? Yes. If you would be honest with me, you have to say, well, he is telling the truth.
He's telling the truth.
He's telling the truth, because that is right. We didn't stop to ask for proof. And we grew up believing it, until somewhere in our psycho paradigm, it has become our reality. It has become our reality. That doesn't mean it's real, though. It simply means it's our reality. Am I making sense so far?
Yes.
Cool. So what's deep is when you honestly believe,
okay, now get this,
that a person raised somebody from the dead, or when you honestly believe that somebody took two fish, five loaves of bread, and fed over 5,000 people, got me? When you honestly believe that somebody broke God's laws of nature and walked on water. Now, trust me, I am a psychotherapist by profession, okay? And what we call the manual we use.
Whoops. Come on. It's going to work. Come on. This is the main thing I wanted you to hear.
The manual we use.
Everyone have to stop using their device now.
come on. Anybody have suggestions? Okay.
Well, I'm gonna tell you basically what he says, and then hopefully it will pop up here. But what he says basically is that if you believe that Jesus was resurrected from the dead, or you believe that someone can take two fish and five loaves and feed over 5,000 people, that this little book that he uses, this diagnostic book, has a code for that. For people that believe things that are not based in reality, that it's a mental illness. It's a psychosis, a mental psychosis. And he truly believes that. So in other words, because we believe in these miracles, we are mentally ill, is what he's trying to say.
And it's amazing the crowd really
buys into that. All right, so enough for him. So,
that's the way a lot of people look at us.
And you can see there's a whole lot behind that.
But why do people not believe in Jesus?
Well, there's a lot of people who believe that they are smarter,
that they are not brainwashed.
And this is a very powerful thing because a lot of people think,
as I talked about before, as I've heard Mike Wilson talk about,
think about in herds. They're followers. And they don't want to stand out. And so if you get enough people thinking that Christians are brainwashed or mentally ill, they're just going to go right along with that without ever questioning it.
And that will keep them from actually looking at the evidence itself. So,
That's one of the reasons I saw.
But a second reason is this, that people believe that there is no proof of Jesus outside the Bible. And again, I want to show you
this video. It's going to be a shorter one. Hopefully this one will work.
But this is a man that does not believe in Jesus because of the proof is not there.
Outside of the Bible, there's no physical evidence that Jesus ever existed. There's no skeletal remains. There's no DNA evidence. There's no physical evidence whatsoever that Jesus ever existed. The only so-called proof of Jesus' existence is in the Bible. But what people don't realize, the Bible is just a man-made written book. It's not the word of God, it's the word of man.
So, there's his part of his introduction into this, that there is no, did you notice what he said? Physical proof of Jesus. No, DNA proof of Jesus. outside the Bible, there's no proof of Jesus. Well, let's first take that statement. There's no physical proof of Jesus outside the Bible. Do you know how many historical men and women we would have to erase from history if we are looking for DNA evidence to prove their existence? If we're looking for their bones, or if we're looking for their physical proof, George Washington, Betsy Ross, think about King Henry VIII. How many ancient historical people we would have to get out of the history books? But people listen to this and they're, oh yeah, that sounds good. Because a lot of people don't realize that whatever proof you put on to Jesus, you have to put on to others. And that's not the way people think. No, the Bible doesn't prove the existence of Jesus through physical means, through DNA. So, is the Bible the only proof of Jesus? And the answer to that is no. No, there is not. But when people make this claim that there's no proof of Jesus outside the Bible, well, what do they say? Well, a lot of people look at Jesus as a man that never existed. They believe that Jesus is just some made-up religious figure. In fact, he is often compared to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or Spider-Man. And then Christians are asked to prove that these exist. If you think Jesus exists, then prove to us that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is real and existed. Now, in that video that cut off, that's one of the points he makes. That to believe in Jesus is like saying that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is real. That Spider-Man is real. And again, people see that and they think, wow, that's right. That's some good evidence. That's some good argumentation. No, it's not. Is it an apples-to-apples comparison? No. Tell me, who in this world is out there saying that Spider-Man is real and that you need to change your life because of what Spider-Man has done for the world? There is no one making that claim. There are not millions of people following Spider-Man because they believe he's real. We understand he's not real. We understand he is a fictional character. That's not the same as Jesus. Jesus has never purported to be a fictional character. But those who write his history write and claim that he was real, and that he was not just a man, but he was the Son of God. And so to compare Jesus to some fictional character, like Spider-Man or Batman or someone like that, is a ridiculous comparison. Because those things are not real. And no one's claiming them to be real. One man commented in his video about Christians, "Have you ever studied Jesus outside the Bible?" And his whole premise was that we simply believe Jesus because we've been taught from day one by our parents about Jesus, and that we need to believe in Jesus, and that all the proof we have of Jesus is in the Bible. But have you ever studied him outside the Bible? Well, I want to say something about that. You can study Jesus outside the Bible. So number one, when he says there's no proof of Jesus outside the Bible, yeah, there's no DNA, but you could say that about a lot of historical characters, men and women. But to say there's no proof of Jesus outside, that just simply is not accurate. And not only that, if you were to study Jesus outside the Bible, you are going to be looking at references to Jesus by unbelievers. So if you expect someone to study Jesus outside the Bible and to get the same Jesus as the Bible, you're just fooling yourself. Those outside references are from unbelievers. And as you study those, a lot of what you're going to get is not going to convince you that he is the Son of God, the Messiah. But I'll tell you what, a lot of them confirm exactly,
not all of them,
but a lot of them confirm exactly what the Bible says. And so as we close this portion of looking at why people don't believe in Jesus, I want to look at some of these outside the Bible references. The first one is by Flavius Josephus. He was a Jewish priest and a Roman sympathizer. So in other words, he worked for Rome. He was in favor with Rome. And he lived the first century to the end of the first century, right at the tail end of Jesus' life. And he wrote two great works, one of them called The Jewish Wars, which were completed AD 70, and the other, The Jewish Antiquities, AD 94. And I want you to see what he writes in one of his histories. He says, "Now there was about this time Jesus, a wise man, if it be lawful to call him a man, for he was a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him both many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. He was the Christ." This is not a Christian that's writing this. This is a Jewish historian. Now, obviously, as you look at this, many have said, wait just a second. They've taken issue. They say that this last statement is not authentic to Josephus. Josephus, being a Jew, would never say that Jesus was the Christ. And so there's a lot of debate over this saying. Okay, even if we took that out, look at what we have. We have Jesus recorded as a real man. We have Jesus called a wise man. We have Jesus doing wonderful works and a teacher of the truth, and that many Jews and Gentiles came to him. And perhaps if this is authentic, it's not that Josephus is saying he believed that, but how these Jews and Gentiles who came to him, why they came to him, why they believed in that. He also says, "And when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men amongst us, had condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at the first did not forsake him. For he appeared to them alive again the third day, as the divine prophets had foretold these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him. And the tribe of Christians, so named for him, are not extinct at this day." And so here's a Jewish historian mentioning the trial by Pilate, the death that came at the hands of Pilate, and not only that, the story of the resurrection and the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. Let's take a look at Tacitus. Tacitus was a Roman historian who lived in the middle of the first century to the beginning of the second century, 55 to 120. And he's considered one of the greatest historians of ancient Rome. He has two acclaimed works called The Annals of Rome and The Histories of the Roman Empire. And in those histories, he writes this: "Consequently, to get rid of the report, Nero fastened the guilt and inflicted the most exquisite tortures on a class hated for their abominations. They were called Christians by the populace. And Christus," notice how he spells or refers to Christ as Christus, "Christus, from whom the name had its origin, suffered the extreme penalty during the reign of Tiberius at the hands of one of our procurators, Pontius Pilatus. And as a most mischievous superstition thus checked for the moment, again broke out not only in Judea, the first source of the evil, but even in Rome, where all things hideous and shameful from every part of the world, or should be world, find their center and become popular. Again, notice what is mentioned about Jesus, not just his existence, but what happened with Pontius Pilate. According to AgapeBibleStudy.com, it says the misspelling of Christ as Christus was a common error made by pagan writers. It is interesting that Pilate is not mentioned in any other pagan document which has survived. It is an irony of history that the only surviving reference to him in a pagan document mentions him because of the sentence of death he passed on Jesus the Messiah. The only time we have Pilate mentioned is in connection with Jesus. Isn't that interesting? All right, Pliny the Younger. Pliny was the Roman governor of Bithynia in about AD 112. And we have a letter that has survived, a letter that the governor writes to the emperor himself, and the emperor in those days was Trajan. And so in this letter, he is seeking the advice from the emperor how to handle Christians. You see, he had been killing many of these Christians, but now he is concerned because so many have chosen death rather than to worship an idol of the emperor. And he's kind of worried because this tactic of killing Christians that won't denounce Christ isn't working. And he's getting kind of a reputation. And so he writes this letter and wants to know what should he do. So here's part of that letter. He says, to curse Christ, which a genuine Christian cannot be induced to do. Look at that. A genuine Christian, you can't get them to curse Christ. It just doesn't work. Even when you threaten their lives. They, the Christians, were in the habit of meeting on a certain fixed day before it was light. And when they sang in alternate verses a hymn to Christ as to God and bound themselves by a solemn oath not to any wicked deeds, not to commit any fraud, theft, or adultery, never to falsify their word, nor to deny any trust when they should be called to deliver it up, after which it was their custom to separate and then reassemble to partake of food, but not food of an ordinary, but an innocent kind. Seems like he's talking about the Lord's Supper there. And so he even talks about the Christians and their worship service, their coming together. And finally, we can look at many others, but we'll stop with Tallis. Tallis was another Roman historian, wrote about the middle of the first century, AD 52, the days of Paul and Peter, when they were around. He wrote a history of the Eastern Mediterranean area from the Trojan War to his own time, but here's the problem. His history, his writing, didn't survive. It no longer exists. So how do we know about it? Well, we recreate it from this man known as Julius Africanus. And Julius Africanus quotes from Tallis. And so that's where we get the existence of it. Julius Africanus wrote around the 3rd century, 221 AD, and he quotes Tallis in regard to the darkness that covered Jerusalem when Jesus was on the cross. And so look at what he writes. Tallis, in his third book of his histories, explains away this darkness as an eclipse of the sun unreasonably, as it seems to me. Unreasonably, of course, because a solar eclipse could not take place at the time of the full moon. And it was at the season of the Passover full moon, that Christ died. so he talks about how Talus was dealing with this eclipse, this darkness, as Jesus died on the cross. So this quote confirms the gospel account of the darkness that many say never happened, that fell across the earth during Christ's crucifixion, that it was well known and required a naturalistic explanation from non-Christians. Why don't people believe in Jesus?
Well, tonight we've looked at a couple reasons. And I hope that it's impactful hearing it from some of these people, the world. But I hope that you see that a lot of this unbelief is not based on solid reasoning and argumentation. It is not based on good arguments or good facts. They are built on things that might sound good, but when you really look at it, they don't have any firm ground. And so I want to encourage us to know and to investigate and to understand why people don't believe in Jesus, where they're coming from. But more importantly, I want to emphasize to us that our faith needs to stand on firm ground, on solid evidence, because there is solid evidence. And so I want to leave you with 1 Peter 3, verse 15. But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence. If someone comes up and asks us, why do you believe in Jesus? I hope that we can say that we do love them, we do care for them. But I hope we could say even more than that and give them a good, solid reason why Jesus truly is the Son of God. If we can help you with that answer, if we can help you fulfill that answer in your life, won't you let that be known tonight as together we stand and as we sing.